pop in your condom gum, strap on your bungee cords, and get ready to get laid on Jim Morrison's grave. We saw An American Werewolf in Paris, so you know what that means.
Show with Nick Crow and take a bubble speed to hitting cruise control. J-Man, Big Paul, and the beautiful Joe. Gonna take you from the boom all the way to the road. Renegade the street fighter, help to blow off steam. Just a sucker punch the odd life for Timothy Green. Sharp little the birdemic, how we staying alive. They call me when they're badass and he's on the line. Cranking 88 minutes cause they cool as ice. Cause the bad Jim Varney looking kinda nice. All the Joe getting literal, Jason is getting laid. Joe is making sure all the shots get paid. They're just a bunch of movies while they're making the grade. Here's a real question for you: how did this get paid?
Hello, people of Earth! Hello, people of Dallas! We are here tonight to talk to you about the 1997 sequel, An American Werewolf in Paris. A lot of people say this might be the best sequel ever. American Werewolf in Paris, Godfather 2, Aliens. That, I believe, is the order. People asked us, why are you doing American Werewolf in Paris in Dallas? Well, because we know there's a Paris, Texas. They have their own Eiffel Tower. And goddamn it, I think the Paris here came first. So there we go. That's why we're doing it. The other Paris stole from you. What is this movie about? Well, I'll tell you. Tom Everett Scott is a daredevil on vacation / daredevil tour. He goes to Paris. He's not very lucky in love. Until he stops a girl from committing suicide. Talk about a meet cute. Finds out that she's a werewolf and then gets caught up in a lot of shenanigans. He also becomes a werewolf and his friends die. But we will break this down and so much more. But first, I must introduce you to my co-host. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome fresh out of quarantine, Jason Mantzoukas.
Love these people wearing masks in the front row. Wouldn't it be great if we all wore masks? Oh, that's right. I'm in Texas.
Jason, have you ever seen American Werewolf in London?
No.
Have you ever seen...
So we were just saying backstage, shockingly, one of the great kind of blind spots in my kind of film... my filmography. I've never seen American Werewolf in London, and it is, I know, beloved, you know?
Same here. So all three of us have not seen original. Here's the
thing.
So
we're going to be pretty informed.
Neither have the people that made this film. So we are in good company. Clearly, this is very much a sequel in kind of name only. I mean, it doesn't even have the Warren Zevon song in it. He had Werewolf in London.
Is that what we think is like the most? Without Warren Zevon, it's not canon.
Right now, we know that there's somebody out here who's an expert on a lot of things, from wigs to the proper way to do a lot of things. She's an expert, and she probably knows a lot about werewolves. Please welcome my other co-host, June Diane Rayfield.
Careful.
Right.
Welcome, June.
Hi,
how
Paul.
Are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for asking. You also haven't seen American Werewolf in London.
No, this was, so much to say.
There is a lot in this movie that is bizarre, because on the surface...
Oh, really?
I would say on the surface, it could be a very good sequel, right? You got a great cast, Julie Delpy, Tom Everett Scott.
Julie Bowen.
A guy who seems to be
like the 90s version of Ike Barinholtz.
Yes, but I'm going to stop you right there, because I cannot sit up here in a swivel chair and allow an applause break for Julie Bowen and not Julie Delpy. Because...
Absolutely.
She's one of the greatest we have, and to see her this way...
Oh, but this is the beginning. This is the beginning.
I will tell you this.
And we know that, but I've always...
Truly one of the greats. And a great filmmaker as well.
That's exactly right.
We love her, and I will tell you this. Watch the Richard Linklater Before Sunset and think of her
this
as this character.
This isn't Unspooled.
Yeah,
think
this
of her
isn't
as this,
this
character.
This isn't Unspooled.
It makes it so much better if you think she's a fucking werewolf. So when I was watching this on Amazon, I hit pause, but then you can hit trivia. And the first piece of trivia that pops up is Julie Delpy is quoted as saying she only did this for rent money.
By the way, isn't that so... What didn't you just say, because we just did Music from Another Room, and didn't you say that Jude Law had a similar quote about...
Yeah.
Right?
He was like,
I did this as a money job.
I needed the money.
And honestly, that's
how much
fine.
Could...
I need the money, too.
Are you going to be in American Werewolf in Dallas?
Happy to be, if anyone's casting.
You should
but,
be
but the werewolf
French
goes
werewolf
out,
in Dallas.
The werewolf goes out at night and is like, too humid, I'm going back in. No, thank you. It is too hot here.
But
your steak
is
on fire.
I will say, to Dallas's credit, the werewolf's hair looks great.
Yeah. Oh, the humidity is doing wonders for these girls.
I mean, I guess let's get into it, because I realized that Julie Delpy was the werewolf, I was so excited. And I was like, oh, this is so interesting. I've never seen a female werewolf before. And I'm so intrigued. And then
when did it wear off?
So, well, I actually want to start with Daredevil tours.
Yes.
Me too.
I want to start with
Daredevil
Tom
points.
Everett,
sex
yes.
points.
Yes,
we meet
sex
Tom
points.
Tom Everett Scott on a train.
So, I'm like, first of all, did they make those teachers themselves? I guess they did. But they did...
100%.
Of course they did.
Well, basically, he is traveling with one guy who was like Dan Cortez from like MTV Sports.
So good.
I was like...
Everybody laughing, you're old. Everybody not laughing who's like, who's Dan Cortez? You're young. Enjoy it. Why are you here? Go party. Enjoy your youth.
But we have our Dan Cortez character and our Ike Barinholtz. But here's my question about this tour, this Daredevil tour. The Dan Cortez guy is the only one who looks like he is like an extreme sports guy. The other two guys look like they're just like, Tom Everett Scott, are you a daredevil? I don't feel
well,
like...
I don't think well, he's, when he is, he's not wearing
when
the
he
t-shirt.
Is shirtless, he is scrawny, and I love
yeah.
it. I love and I love Tom Everett Scott, and he's so good in this, and it's a blast. But he is like a scrawny, skinny dude when he, and I'm like, what planet are you like, we're gonna scale the Eiffel Tower, we're gonna bungee jump off of it.
But here's my problem with his character, not him. I love him. I was obsessed with him as a young person. I wish that he had been set up, because at the end of the movie, and just to jump ahead a little bit, he jumps in when we get to sort of the cure for what's happening with a line where he says, why don't I take a crack at it?
I wrote this down, yeah.
Okay, I want to talk about that for a second, because it made me angry. It made me so angry, because I was like, my dude, like, her stepfather, Julie Delpy's stepfather, who's a scientist and has degrees behind him, and even Julie Delpy, who's had the experience of being in this situation
Absolutely.
And is a nurse,
And he is.
Wait. Is she a nurse?
It seems like on a Eurorail pass trip through, like on college semester abroad or something.
Yeah.
I feel like this is just spring break. Is she a nurse or is she just in the hospital to steal hearts?
Well, that actually is a good question.
It seems like to steal hearts, but she might have some sort of.
I thought that she was a nurse.
I believe that she's taking care of her dad who is legless. When I will say that when I saw that legless
werewolf. She saw
the
medical equipment.
And you're saying who's legless, not legoless.
Now, but I would like to see a legless.
The movie so deeply wants you to invest in their love story that you have to remember both of them, by the end of the movie, are murderers. They have committed multiple acts of murder
of
innocent people. Now, I want to be clear with you. Tom Everett Scott's character murders Julie Bowen.
Yeah.
Murders her. And at the end of the movie, is she released like his buddy Brad?
No.
No. She's trapped in some sort of hellscape limbo.
Yeah.
Because, she just wanted to hang out with him and he turns into a werewolf, straight up kills her, and then is like, but I found true love.
No, but she's a woman who wants to have sex, so she got what she deserved as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk about, because there were a couple times where I was like, I think I'm getting a little mixed up between vampires and werewolves what I know about vampires and what I know about werewolves.
Can I? Yes, go ahead.
Yeah.
I would like to say something.
There's no silver bullet. There's no.
For
all
a
the
movie
things that, I,
that is about an iconic. Like monster.
Sure.
There are shockingly no exposition dumps, no rules, none, and also none of the totemic issues about werewolves other than the full moon, which they circumvent by being like, oh, we've got a thing that gives you an outbreak.
And it seems like...
But there's, you're right. There's no silver bullets. There's none of the iconic werewolf mythology is even explained to anybody.
No one even, no one even attempts to say, hey, in this world, these are our rules, because it's constantly changing. And then, at one point, I guess it's getting close to a full moon, and Julie Depley is, super strong, but then she's not strong at all at the end. Is that just because as it gets close to the full moon, it gets...
gets stronger.
Okay.
But after the full moon, I think you're just a normal person.
But if you take an antidepressant... You don't turn.
Wait, an antidepressant?
Their dad gave her an antidepressant, and then she actually became a werewolf.
She's on werewolf Zoloft?
No. She's not on Prozac. She's on a depressant.
Oh, depressant.
But
sorry.
Not an antidepressant.
There were so many things that it could have been, because it also started as a Cinderella analogy. He finds the glass slipper. He has the one shoe. He has to track her down and find her. Is this your shoe? And I was like, oh, are they going to map a fairy tale thing onto this werewolf story? No, they're not.
But they will map some Limp Bizkit onto
a
little detective scenes. I do want to play that, because at first I was like, there was a band that kind of sounded like Limp Bizkit. I was like, I guess I couldn't afford Limp Bizkit. Little did I know, only two scenes later, they were like, now we can afford Limp Bizkit for the detective montage, which Ike Barinholtz says, can we cue that one up? When Ike Barinholtz says, not Limp Bizkit, Smash Mouth, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Sorry, they couldn't afford Limp Bizkit.
They are both gonna be here at the county fair in 1 month.
Together. At last. With 311.
Yes. 311. And Incubus.
Right? Oh my God.
But there was but there are
That's
some
what
things...
music was. And everybody who cheered for Dan Cortez, you were like, I had those CDs.
The best moment was when Fred Durst played Rock and Jock Baseball and totally hit the 100 home run circle. And they went up against LL Cool J's team before he was an actor. So, but there is a moment, though, where the Ike Barinholtz character says, okay, Mrs. Marple. And I was like, there's no way on hell the Daredevil Club is quoting like the secondary Agatha Christie detective.
Also, is the burn that you're Miss Marple but married? Is the burn that you're like Mrs. Marple?
Well, that's what I couldn't understand about not just the rules of werewolves in the movie, but the rules of the Daredevil tours. Because I'm like, what is it in this world of the film, of the motion picture, what is it to be a daredevil? You know, what is it? Is it just having sex?
No.
It's like the bungee jumping.
Right,
and the,
but sex points that's
are
fine. Different than
sex Daredevil points. Are, don't, sex points don't factor into
translate.
Daredevil points.
Okay,
right,
so they're
one
just,
guy has
so,
a lot of sex points.
Okay, so.
And that we know just because of life.
Of course. But there, I guess what I'm saying is they're just horny daredevils. That's
well,
it?
Well, two of the that's three are the, horny.
That's the new Disney Plus series. Featuring Matt Murdock.
It ain't no joke that I am going
Listen,
to get laid. I'm gonna go down
I
on Jim
for
Morrison's
sure,
grave.
For sure that the Daredevils were gonna the concept of being in the Daredevil tour group was going to come back in some way, that in order to fight the werewolves, in order to become a werewolf.
But it does
help
suppress it.
What do you mean by that?
The end of the movie.
What
the
do you
way
mean?
That they
come
keep,
again?
What? Well, I thought this was apparent. At the end of the movie, they jump off the Statue of
Liberty. Yeah, they jump off the Statue of Liberty.
At their wedding.
But that is to suppress the werewolf-ism
what?
In them.
It is not.
I'm pretty
Boo.
Sure.
Boo.
What the
Pretty
fuck
sure.
are
no,
you talking about, buddy?
That's
sure.
how.
What?
Wait, how
Pretty
do you
sure.
think that was set up? This is a wild
what
take.
What are you talking about? He had already eaten the heart of the werewolf that killed him.
This is.
So he is no longer a werewolf. And because he's no longer a werewolf, she's no longer a werewolf.
This
no,
is.
No, why does she not be a werewolf?
Because the same guy turned
her.
Them both into werewolves.
Oh, I actually thought that he
Cloud.
Turned her. Okay, yeah, but either way, they're no longer werewolves way before that bungee jump. Paul!
Because it is, and
Paul,
we know that, because
yeah,
it is
keep it spinning around.
Several moons later. Several moons later, they're getting married to murderers. Justice for Julie Bowen.
Justice for Julie Bowen.
Whose soul is forever... she's undead. What is she says?
Well,
she's
as long
undead?
As Tom Everett Scott is alive, yeah.
Yes, because
you know,
she's cured.
Rest.
She's trapped in some limbo. Brad gets to go to whatever, but there
he actually rushes it. He's like, I gotta go. Come on.
He's like, thanks, man. I'll talk to you later. Bye. Fist bump. You know, it's fucked up.
It is fucked up.
But I want you know, and we can talk about it for conservatively 6 hours. But boy. Do I wish this movie had been told from the point of view of the guy named Chris?
The guy who was crucified?
Chris! Who's the guy who's crucified?
Oh.
Who's crucified and remains on the cross? and flees. Oh, we gotta remember. We haven't even talked about the fact that not only are the bad guys werewolves, they're Nazi werewolves! They believe in the master race of Nazi werewolves. This is some next level nonsense. It's not bad enough that they're like, we're werewolves. They gotta be like, and we only believe in the purity of this race.
But they also only want to take the scumbags of the earth, right? Like, they only want the bad people.
I think they want to chomp the bad.
Okay.
They want to feast on the bad, but to turn...
Then, okay,
go ahead.
Sure, yeah. So feast on the bad to get their hearts, so then they could turn into werewolves whenever, because werewolves... But then to live as werewolves seems not fun, because you're just...
You just
I don't know. They have raves all the time.
I mean, I guess
so
you're...
So I just want to go back for a second. So you thought they were bungee jumping off the Statue of Liberty, and during that jump,
I was Googling it right now to see. You thought
that was because that meant that they would stave off a full moon werewolf?
Listen,
you think Remus Lupin is out in these streets? You think Remus Lupin is out in these streets being like, if I just bungee jump off of Hogwarts, off of the owlry, like, am I going to be okay?
It's so tough because as I sit here tonight, you know, I'm sure some of you can relate when you've been married to someone for a long time. Jason, you wouldn't know about this. But I'm sure, I just saying, you won't understand what I'm going to say. But when you've been with someone for a long time and then all of a sudden they do something or say something and you look at them and think, wow, I don't know you. I don't know you at all. You're brand new to me. Who are you? That's how I feel right now.
I thought that they were, you know what I forgot? I really didn't really take in that Tom Everett Scott eats that guy's heart. Because you see him when he murders him in the train, it's like, ah! And then it's just like blood.
Yes.
Like, you don't see like a shunk.
You're right.
You're
absolutely right. You don't see that transactionally happen. The connective tissue is he sees the scar.
Right.
And is like, oh, you're the one who bit me.
Right.
So I know if I eat your heart, then that...
But
so
I still want to see him bite the heart.
But here's... He does, babe. He does.
I was watching it on my iWatch.
So because there was some confusion, he thought Julie Delpy was the werewolf that bit him.
Right. Yes, yes.
And then he didn't want to kill her.
Because
here's what's weird, though. Does she know in that moment that she's not the werewolf that bit him?
Again, the movie does us no favors. This movie is in... We talk so often about movies that are, like... that are leaden with exposition,
right,
that have so much exposition that you're like, oh, this is insufferable. This movie needed exposition because we did not, there were clearly rules at play that they were just like, oh, we're not going to touch it.
Moment in this movie where someone escapes from the police, Tom Everett Scott, by getting in like a morgue slab, and it's like those detectives saw the room with no windows. And they were standing in front of the door, they'd go like, let's open some of these doors up here. Let's go.
This movie, here's what I had a question about. We've done a terrible job, like, talking about, like, the plot of the movie in a lot of ways. So the Daredevil Club goes to the top of the Eiffel Tower in order to bungee jump off.
Yes.
Tom Everett Scott's going to do it because he's behind in points and blah, blah, blah. Julie Delpy goes off. She's going to commit suicide. He jumps off. He saves her. He gets her shoe.
Wait, can we just watch that scene? Because this scene is amazing. This is the Eiffel Tower jump scene here.
Listen, wait. Don't. Okay? Nothing's that bad. Hold it. No. Please, let me help you. Okay.
What a meet cute.
With that bonk on his head, we must ask a question that we never allow to be asked, but is this entire thing a Jacob's Ladder scenario? Because...
I mean, it would make more sense that... Because here's
the two things...
Dreams
don't have logic.
Here's
the
two things that would happen in this scene. His leg would get ripped off immediately. And when his friends are pulled to the railing, they would be pushed through it and like into mush. Like nobody survives this. Also,
but you get 50 Daredevil
points. Dumb American like college students get to the top. No fucking way.
The way they pop up like doink.
I'm just obsessed with how, and I've never bungee jumped, so I'm not an expert in that field. just that one. But I'm like, when you jump off, and even if you're trying to get someone, the fact that Tom Everett Scott like morphs his body into a Superman position.
He just knows what to do.
Yeah, it seems
also,
like he's been planning for this.
Also, are they traveling with bungee cord, bungee rope?
I think
bungee,
so.
Whatever.
It's part of the Daredevil tour. You get it on the first day of Daredevil camp. A bungee cord,
but the movie
baggy
does
shirts.
No work to tell us that they are daredevils. The movie should have opened with not them on the train being like, how many daredevil points do you have? It should have opened with them doing a stunt. Something
yes.
that established them as...
They took
point,
a train, Jason.
Point break
that's
level.
Dangerous.
Like it should, it should have started with like a Point Break style.
Not
like,
only that, Jason, though, but what it should have done is set up Tom Everett Scott as the guy who's really uncomfortable doing this stuff. The guy who doesn't want to do the scary stuff, doesn't, you know, like it, and is super nerdy and bookish so that it makes sense when he says, let me give it a try, or let me take a crack at it.
That
I'm
would
still
be
so
like,
mad at that.
That would be like
I'm
me
so
walking.
Mad.
It's so insulting on so it's, many levels. They don't even say he's a scientist.
No.
He has no interest in science. He knows nothing.
I'm like, wow, the hubris, you know?
Well, here's
this woman's been a werewolf for a long time. She ate her parents.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Nobody in this movie understands what's happening in the movie. Right? Like absolutely staggering, life-altering things happen to every character in this movie, and they're like, instead of being like, oh my God, my friend just died. Oh my God, I've been turned into a werewolf. They're like, do you like me? Like, the movie wants to have it every way so that, like, there are, like, zero consequences. Tom Everett Scott is bitten by a werewolf and is very obviously, a werewolf. He's being told he's a werewolf, and he's like, ha, nah, come on. And he does that for half an hour.
Long time.
He will not accept reality. He is hungry for red meat. This is when he meets Julie Bowen. He murders her and is still like, oh man, I got a crush on this girl.
Well, that's
but
another.
There's no way I'm a werewolf, right?
And that's another one of the rules I wanted to know more about. Like, when you're in your werewolf state, you know, do you remember that afterward? Like, is it.
I think they are saying no.
Oh, so he... Well, that actually makes me feel a little bit better.
Like,
so
he's not a murderer. He's a dog. He's a straight-up dog in
so
those
So he
moments.
Doesn't remember killing her at all.
I don't think so.
And that's
but he knows
people,
he did.
He knows he
but
did, but he doesn't remember it.
That's what these people want the New World Order to be. Just a bunch of dogs running around. They're like, wouldn't it be great? No
wouldn't
disease?
Wouldn't it be great if we could commit
dogs?
Random acts of murder and not have to feel at all emotionally invested in the actions that we did? Hang on, we're living in that.
So I will say this. The movie doesn't know what tone it's supposed to
yeah.
be. It's sometimes it's scary, sometimes it's scary, like sometimes it's scary, sometimes it's funny, but it's not really funny, and then sometimes it's just like an MTV movie.
Can I ask a question of the audience, because the three of us have not seen admittedly American Werewolf in London,
yes.
right?
Is this the audience Q&A section?
I just want to ask the audience, and this is dicey. I want to ask the audience, like, that is a straight-up horror movie, right?
But it's funny.
But it's
John Landis. It's funny, though,
is
too.
But I mean, I'm sorry. What I mean to ask is there a romance inside of it?
Yes.
Oh, there is. Okay, so this is... okay, got it. That's what I was wondering, because
okay.
this seemed to be so focused on their love story and not about the savage brutality of the werewolf.
No, like John Landis, that's like one of his like classic films, even though I haven't seen it. But the one thing I know about American Werewolf in London, this is the one thing. When I was a kid, I would go to like Walt Disney World and Universal Studios. No applause. Okay, so... But they would always have...
Texas is like, fuck Disney.
Schlitterbahn! Schlitterbahn is what you should be talking about.
It's a water park in Houston.
But here's my thing that I knew. When I would go there with my dad, we would go to like the horror stunt shows. And it was like a family themes, like how they do movie magic and makeup and effects. And the only movies that were available to show the effects for were like R-rated films. So my first experience with Scarface was at like with a bunch of families in Orlando going, and this is how Al Pacino shot a man in the face. And they would play this scene where it's like, shut up, poof, blood. Never seen a man get his head blown off. And then the next scene.
But that was at Disney?
Universal. Oh, slightly cooler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the other scene they would show is from American Werewolf in London. So I want to just do one thing because I think it's a perfect time to show it. So let's watch the transformation from this movie. This is the transformation from this film. So check it out.
So many nipples!
All right, so that is the transformation in this movie. Now, the only thing I know about American Werewolf in London is every time you ever see a special effects documentary, it is referenced because what they are following is this transformation. So I just want to show, like, this is what they're duplicating, and this makes me upset. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Now that is a transfer. The one thing that we know from that movie is like, what an epic scene, and we just get turning into a fucking straight up CGI like
yeah.
that.
This. I mean, again, Paul, this isn't Unspooled.
I just want to make sure you know that's not Amy Nicholson.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, but it's like...
I'm not Quentin Tarantino.
But I'm just saying, like, the one thing that movie is known for is this amazing transformation that looks so crazy and painful.
That
and
is
they
incredible.
Don't do.
Yeah.
All he does is jump into a water fountain and come out like a Cloverfield monster. Like, he.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's no, like.
Well, also, that piece of filmmaking juxtaposing this horrible body horror kind of scenario yeah. against You Send Me is like, that's interesting. Like, yeah. this movie is like, we're going to play Smash Mouth. And we're gonna have CGI wolves run around and chomp people. Like.
And the thing about the CGI wolf, like the werewolves in this movie are so very wolf-like. Like there's nothing about them that's really reminiscent of them ever being human.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that really hurt them. You know, because we don't get to see.
We don't get any sense of their humanity, you mean?
Well, yeah,
but
also I think they would have been scarier in some ways had they looked more human. Like they just look like crazy animals.
The other thing that I didn't know about werewolves is, do they have heat vision like the Predator? Because whenever you get the werewolf POV,
that was my question.
Like they can see heat, but everything seems to be heat.
Not just heat, but not just heat. Also, like in the case of Julie Bowen, her perfume.
Right.
She spritzes yeah. her perfume around so that he will follow that. She's being smart. She's like, he's tracking my scent. And that's the thing is Tom Everett Scott starts to be able to like hear better and smell better. Like Julie Bowen is a tourist in Paris and she meets a guy at a thing who's like,
and he's literally
approaches her like a fucking
lunatic,
maniac,
lunatic.
And she's like, I'm all in.
All in. He has like steak oil and juices all over his face when he's talking to her.
He's chomping a steak. No, like it is. My heart breaks for her. Justice again for Julie Bowen.
Listen,
in this movie.
Justice for Julie Bowen.
And but by the way, even after she dies, she continues to turn in maybe the best performance
1,000%.
In the
movie. 1,000%.
I would say. The most gross performance.
Except for Chris, who the minute he runs out still crucified, I was like,
I was like, guy, you win the movie.
Because that must have been hard. I mean, can you even imagine having your arms out like that and running?
Oh,
Chris,
with a cross?
How many Chris takes of that? It's a big scene. How many takes did they have to do where he was like, maybe can I have come off the cross? And they're like,
no.
In the
you
logic.
You carry it like Christ through the 12 stations. I was a religion major.
Who are you? In the logic of this movie, Chris has been on that crucifix for 2-3 days.
And to be quite honest, this is what I didn't understand about those skinhead werewolves. I'm like, so from what I understand, once you become a werewolf, you have very little self-control. You need to
get...
Once you're a wolf, you need to get that meat. But it did seem...
Another t-shirt idea.
By the way, that's the t-shirt. You need to get that meat. Dallas, Texas.
But it seemed...
Andy McDermott's Steakhouse. Need to get that meat.
But it seemed like those werewolves, the skinhead Nazi werewolves, were able to really restrain themselves around Chris. Even when they were werewolves.
Oh,
like,
I'm
he
sorry.
Wasn't
yes.
interesting to them.
They didn't chomp
them.
Him. They
Ever.
Were. I felt like that was only because they were using him as bait.
But that's, I guess, my
something.
Question. Once bait? You're a werewolf, can you even think through bait?
Here's the thing. Oh, yeah, I think, yes, they can when they're in their skinhead form. But
of course, interesting, but once they transform.
But what's interesting is Tom Everett Scott, again, who is the loveliest and who is wonderful, he couldn't give two shits about Chris or Brad. Over,
his good friend
over
dies.
And over again, he saves himself at the expense of them. He never says, Chris is still in there. We got to go get him. He's like, where do I go? I'm out of here. My question is this. So, I'm going to go back to the beginning of the movie. The scene we just watched. Tom Everett Scott saves Julie Delpy from committing suicide by jumping off the Eiffel Tower, which, of course, happens all the time. He saves her life. She disappears. Then he's in the hospital covered in clumsy bandages. He sees her in the hospital. He's like, hey, wait a minute. And then she gets away. And what are the odds? He would see her twice, okay? Next thing he says to his buddies, did you find the note? And they're like, what note? He's like, her suicide note. They leave. They come back with her suicide note. Next thing you know, they're at her house. Is her address on her suicide note?
Wait,
I can't go on. I killed my parents. I feel so guilty. What's
her
name?
She might have wrote, and Legolas is in the basement.
Her name, the full address.
She might have been saying, Legolas is in the basement. Come rescue him because no one's there to take care of him.
Yes.
So, I mean, maybe
but that's it.
The thing that I found to be more preposterous was the way they went to go find the note was to go through every garbage can within the area and find anything written down. They're like reading grocery lists. Like, nope. Nope. Like, the chances of finding a suicide note.
And when he
note,
goes to meet her at her house, again, moments previous, he was covered in bandages. He's now wearing just a bandana. And not a bandana like this, but a bandana like we used to, when I was in college, wear, like, tucked in back here.
Yeah, it's like a do-rag, which I don't like to see white men wearing.
And I was like, this
like
is
it.
The impression you're going to make?
Who was that rocker who had that VH1 show, right?
Vince Neil?
Vince Neil, yeah, it's that Vince Neil style.
It was, and...
No?
Wait, what?
Brett Michaels,
Brett
thank
Michaels.
You. Brett
I
Michaels.
I apologize.
Watch this.
Texas,
watch
relax.
This, watch this. Hey, this is what we'll do in the actual show. You know, it reminded me of, like, Brett Michaels.
That's true.
Good one, Paul.
And I was never confused. I was never confused by the ending.
We haven't talked about the condom chewing gum scene.
I got that, too. Wait, should we just... Can we just, as we're giving justice for Julie Bowen, we have the scene queued up here. I just want to watch a little bit of Julie Bowen, because this scene is wild. And the way he approaches her, think of it as Jim Carrey from Ace Ventura. Here we go.
Like, what? I want to be clear again. This is such a sympathetic character who is murdered. The movie wants you to believe in the love story of Tom Everett Scott and Julie Delpy so much. Julie Delpy, again, the greatest. That they are like, it is incidental that this woman alone in Paris is murdered as a byproduct of their love story.
Well, and listen.
It doesn't weigh on their conscience.
Not for a second.
All.
By the way, I think that she should have been at the Statue of Liberty because it seems like they're doomed to walk the earth
yes.
in slight step with the person that killed them.
Absolutely.
So I think that that's a great sequel.
What I wrote here a number of times is, why not just explain what's happening?
Why not, what's the harm?
Why not just say, because people keep saying, like, what's going on? What is this? What's happening?
I think.
And people are like, don't worry about it. It's nothing.
I think one of the reasons for it is there are 14 credited screenwriters to this.
Oh.
One of them being John Landis, who wrote the first one. Didn't use a single word of it. And then the other guys who wrote the first draft said there's only one joke left. And I didn't even hear that joke that they said was left in here.
Wow. It really is like, there's a moment where Dan Cortez, the character Chris, the crucified Chris, who's a Christ-like character, and whose body is fetishized to a degree throughout, where he is stripped down to his underwear. He's in the prison that Julie Delpy has put herself in before, and he wakes up like, huh, what am I doing here? What is everybody completely blasé about circumstances that are insane? And he's like, huh, okay. And what a good job he does. He takes off all his clothes. He gets the key to his cell. He opens it, and there is a curtained off area where monster noises are happening. And he comes up to it and he goes, hey, you okay in there? My guy? No.
Well,
like
wait.
Some next level bad shit's going on. Like probably the guy or girl in there is not okay. You should be wary. Here's what there wasn't in this movie. This movie should have had one character who was not in it, who is some grizzled old person, some grizzled old man or woman who's like the Van Helsing of this story, who's like, okay, what you're up against are werewolves. They are vulnerable only to this, this, and this. They are the lineage of this. These are the young ones. They're arrogant and Nazis and blah, blah, blah. But it's you know, give me Chris Christopherson or give me somebody.
Oh, wow.
Give me somebody in here who's like, here's what you need to know. Then that person gets chomped.
But by the way,
and Tom Everett Scott at least is like, now I understand the lay of the land. We do too.
It's 1997. I'm bringing back the rock and jock vibe. Put Tone Loc in there and have Tone Loc be like, hey man,
so
let me tell you what's going on.
So you want this to be a full-blown rock and jock cast?
Yeah, I want this. I want Tone Loc to be a bartender. I serve them, but yeah, these werewolves are crazy. You know, it's like, you gotta watch out for these werewolves. You know, I would
he
like
just
that.
Works at the werewolf rave?
I work for them, I don't question them, and that's a deal we make. I keep the tips, they supply the liquor. You know, and that's like, we tell you the whole story. I want that kind of guy.
We needed a Friar character,
yeah.
For sure. But we only had 14 screenwriters. We needed 15, I guess. We needed one more.
But wait, the question that I ask, I don't know if it's been answered by except for the yelling, which is, could you tell the werewolves apart?
Oh, heavens
you could.
No. What?
Whoever said yes is a fucking liar.
What? No. There is nothing defining about these werewolves.
Except for this guy. Our
what
werewolf expert over
them?
Here is like, I know the difference.
How about when
Wait, hold on. What is it?
She has 8 nipples, so you can tell the difference between a man and a woman.
Nipples. He says
I will
that
say.
She has 8 nipples.
I will
Sir,
say you're right.
I stand corrected. You
He's
are
right.
a smart person.
She does have a full-blown set of nipples. So Julie Bowen and Tom Everett Scott are getting it on Jim Morrison's grave. He starts to become so hot, literally.
Smoking hot.
So hot, and he flees and jumps in the fountain. But he does explode then out of it in wolf form. Julie Bowen, obviously terrified for her life, runs away, blah, blah, blah. She manages to evade him. And this is where the guy that I thought was going to be the Van Helsing type character, the French detective, comes in and is like, I'm police, don't worry. And she says, do we remember? Oh, you cured my hiccups. What? She just saw a 6'2" werewolf that she was fucking and chased her through a cemetery, and her number one relief, point of relief is that her hiccups are gone.
Thank you, sir.
You cured my hiccups.
That's why I'm saying I do think, again, justice for Julie Bowen, and I do stand
Tom Everett
in solidarity. But
both of them and the guy's dog. There is blood on his
true.
Hands.
It's true.
They lift up that dog.
Oh, my God, the dog.
They lift
dog
up the dog.
Is dunzo.
Okay, I have never... I'm going to be honest. I've never really seen a dead dog. And I'm comfortable enough with you all to share that. And that was very upsetting. And
the way they handled it.
The way they handled it was like...
And also the way it was splayed.
Splayed out.
It was like starfished out on the ground.
To me, it was like he ripped it open and it just like stayed open.
And again, the lead of the movie... The man we're supposed to be rooting for
has done
is
this.
Responsible for that. The guy that we're like, oh man, I just want them to make it work. He fucking ended that
dog.
Totally.
Wait a second. But
and
wait
it's
a
like,
second.
Honestly though, justice for Julie Bowen, but justice for that dog,
justice
too.
Justice for that dog.
You know?
But,
oh,
also,
you cured my hiccups. Again, I cannot stress how preposterous that line is.
But also justice for Tom Everett Scott, because he was just a daredevil on vacation who gets bit
and he becomes
a fucking monster.
I disagree
entirely. 100%.
So he should commit suicide?
Julie Delpy said over and over and over again,
Get the fuck away from here.
Get out of here. Your life is in danger. It's not safe. And he was like, I want to fuck so bad. I won't listen to women.
It was really, I have no sympathy for him.
Really?
And even beyond that, Jason, I'm like, you make t-shirts with your friends about a Daredevil tour. Like, whatever happens to you, happens to you. Like, I can't muster it up.
I took more offense that, like, he's like, I'm in love with her. The suicidal woman who jumped off the Eiffel Tower, who he's never even spoken a word to. He's like,
but my
she's my dream
is,
girl. I'm like, really?
My thing is, she. So they're at the rave, the first Nazi werewolf rave. Him and his buddies. Claude has invited them. He told them she's going to be there. Obviously, she's not because they want to chomp these guys. She arrives and is like, oh, my God, you got to get out of here. This is so dangerous. Your life is in danger. And he's like, what? Okay. And the guys are like, okay, your girl's here, man. Go on. And Ike Barinholtz is like, all right, bro. And then he's like, I guess I'm going. And then she's like, you don't understand. Your life is in danger.
Danger,
and at no point is he like, oh, then let me go get my guys. Let me save. He's like, nobody believes nobody believes when they're told that there is danger afoot. They all think, you're lying, or I don't believe you, or
this is the way French girls
what flirt. I want matters more.
Right.
My narrative trumps your reality.
And with that, I'm going to come to you for some questions. You got one? All right, you come over to me. All right. First, give me your best wolf call. And then you're quite like, I'll go, oh, something like that. Give me one of those. And then you're, ow, ow, ow. Amazing. Now, what's your question?
So in this movie, I feel like they tried to set Seraphine up as the good
That's
werewolf.
Her name.
Because She gets her hearts from the hospital. She doesn't murder.
Right.
But she stole it straight out of an open heart surgery.
That was Oh my God.
Oh, that's a good point.
God, that's a good point. I assume she took the bad heart, but I guess there's only one. It wasn't necessarily a transfer.
How funny would it be if they were like, and well, let me just get that. Oh, wait a minute.
Well, that's what happened. You're right. The surgeon's looking for
it. Well, the surgeon where did comes it go? Out, and he's like, I was doing this heart transplant.
Oh, that's right.
And somebody just took the heart. Have you seen it?
How is your day at work, babe? You know, the weirdest thing happened.
Great question.
Wow. So, yeah, you're right. Let's add that person to the death toll, because they're dead.
By the way, she's trying to be an ethical werewolf. You know, she's trying to
which
be,
which is
like,
hard.
But, you know, no, that's somebody who's done. Like, oh, that's a rough one, though. Somebody who's waited on a list for years for a heart transplant? That somehow is better?
Listen, this is a great spot to pause the podcast and talk about donating our organs. I'm signed up as an... I'm dead fucking serious. I'm dead serious.
Absolutely. You gotta donate
those organs.
I gotta get... You know, if shit goes down, somebody's...
Put a werewolf clause in there. Say, I don't
no
want
werewolves?
Stolen by werewolves. Yeah.
No. No, yes. I will donate my organs, but not to werewolves. To make heart smoothies.
All right, your best werewolf call on your question.
Okay, it's Lindsay. Ow!
Nice. Friend says weak.
Do it again. It's like there was something you guys missed after like the whole sex scene in the cemetery. Julie Bowen goes, I just want someone to sleep in the wet spot. And that was a real big
thank you okay. So much.
Okay. We didn't miss it. We didn't miss it. We were trying to erase it from our minds.
Thank you so much.
I wrote this down because this is a joke construction or a thing that is in so much content of like, who's going to sleep in the wet spot? Does anybody here, when's the last time anybody here ever was like, who's gonna sleep in the wet spot? Like, or was like, I guess I'm sleeping in the wet spot. How many, raise your hand if you've recently had a wet spot. This lady? I'm not gonna lie, put a towel down. What?
It just seemed like something the 90s was very concerned about.
The 80s. The 80s and 90s were,
and early 90s were obsessed with the wet spot
as if it's like, and the true absolute most disgusting piece of disrespect is I slept in the wet spot. Or the greatest piece, and you know what was great about him? He slept in the wet spot. And I'm like, what's a wet? When's the last time you ever saw a wet spot? Put a goddamn towel down like a fucking adult.
I am up in the upsetting fourth balcony.
Paul, honestly, like that balcony, babe.
Where? Oh, up
that,
there.
That balcony is full of wet spots.
It's just like one giant wet spot. The entire thing ends in a drain.
Your best werewolf call and your question.
That's Scooby-Doo.
As a matter of fact, let me get all of Balcony 4 to do a werewolf call. 1, 2, 3. All right, your question.
Okay, so speaking of heights, the geometry of the Eiffel Tower has to be the worst building to bungee jump off.
Okay, this is great to know. Break it down. Why?
It goes like this. I mean, like, you fall to the Eiffel Tower. It's not a straight shot.
You would fall. I thought about that.
You'd fall into the middle of the tower first.
You'd have to.
Because it expands out like a pyramid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would bounce off of multiple levels.
Especially because of the way he jumps off to get
her, which is straight
down.
It's like jumping off a pyramid.
Down. Yes.
It's like jumping off of Nicolas Cage's grave. Or a tomb, whatever it is. It's essentially a pyramid with a long top. So you would die in the middle.
Secondly, he has a piece of paper with mathematical equations, which are wrong.
Well, yes. Can I ask, what was that?
He has the gravity listed as 3 meters per second, which is just flat out wrong. That's not an ex.
You're telling. I'm sorry.
Like, what is that comparable?
I'm so sorry. Hang on.
Gravity is 9.8 meters per second.
You're telling me that.
It's not.
All right, Dallas.
Okay.
By the way.
Okay.
By the way.
You're telling me that
all of level four are like, yeah, finally someone said it.
But my point is, how are you that smart and are in balcony four? These fucking morons knew how to get a seat early. These dummies are like, I don't know, werewolves? And you're like, the measure of gravity per second is, and you're like, but I'm 1 1/4 mile away from the show.
Jason, June, obviously,
yes, Paul.
We had opinions about this film, but there are people out there with a different opinion. It is now time for second opinions.
He met Seraphine not at all, Moulin
yes.
Rouge. No, but jumping off the Eiffel Tower. Boy, he took a leap, he grabbed her by the feet, yeah. Give me 5 stars. You know I love a real green screen. Give me bad CGI. Did you see the boobs on Seraphine?
Amazing.
Hey, Shelby.
What's your name?
She said it.
Shelby.
Shelby.
Shelby, everybody.
Amazing, Shelby. She's too cute.
And for those of you listening at home, you just heard a great song while we heard 46 of them.
All over a minute. No.
And some of them weren't songs.
At all.
They were just things that happened to us.
These are 5-star reviews culled from Amazon.com. There are 249 total reviews. 63% are 5-star. That's it, 63%.
Wow.
And this one goes, this one is written in 2020 by Jay West, and it starts off like this. I thought this was just as good as the original, but it doesn't surpass it, though. I love the hilarious scenes when Andy ate the condom and blew it like a balloon and it landed in a guy's soup. And then when Andy found out that Seraphine was in the hospital and he talks like in a funny voice. I thought that when Seraphine jumped on Andy in her bed and took off her shirt and showed her boobs was a good scene. The effects of the werewolf looked totally real. The storyline was a lot different than the original. I'm glad they went a different direction. It would have been boring if the director went in the same direction like the original. The acting was hilarious and good too. Great performances and roles by Tom Everett Scott, Julie Bowen, and Julie Delpy. I recommend it if you love werewolves. 5 stars. The greatest remake to the original. But yeah, he also calls it a sequel. So, and I think it is a sequel because I believe that Julie Delpy is the daughter of the people in the first movie. Anyway, that's...
Oh,
that's,
is that right? Yeah. Oh, okay.
And right here, Grant jumps right in and goes, hey, I'm looking for a werewolf movie that has lots of blood, killing, and turning other people into werewolves. Watching the people turn and a lot of other monsters slash demons or vampires that are in the movie too. If you know a movie that's like that, email me at excite.com.
Wow, he doesn't want to just
email
do
that
be a
address.
Don't. Well, we're gonna edit that out. But
that
also,
out.
Like, doesn't want to rely on a Google search or anything.
I mean, imagine if this was the movie that introduced you to werewolves so much that you wanted more of it.
Those are some second opinions. Jason, June, would you recommend this film?
Yes. I would, because we've watched so many terrible movies, and to me this was not a difficult watch, and it was engaging to me, and I did enjoy some of the bits and the bobs of comedy in there.
Yeah.
And I love Julie Delpy. I mean, I watch her do anything, you know.
I agree.
I agree.
Like, I, and not just Julie Delpy. I will say this movie is, I mean, straight up bananas, obviously. And there's a lot in it that truly, as we've talked about tonight,
just makes no sense. And if you are looking to try and track a plot or a story or understand why and what the rules of this story are, you're going to be disappointed. But A, the fact that they're in Paris, great. And yes, the fact that it is Tom Everett Scott, Julie Delpy, Julie Bowen, people who are like carrying this movie.
Yeah.
Like Tom Everett Scott is doing incredible work for a man who is inside of a movie where he's like, wouldn't I be upset that like my best friend just died and that I've murdered people? And they're like, no, you just still like the girl. And he's like, all right. And he does it. He does it and he makes you believe it. My only regret truly is that I had not seen the first movie. And
yes,
I feel like I would have enjoyed it truly even more had I known what,
yeah,
Paul,
what Paul knew
as a scholar
all
of the first movie.
All I'm going to say is that's like saying you would have enjoyed Godfather 3 if you saw Godfather 2 and 1. And I don't think that that's necessarily true because it's tangential. It's like, again, I have not seen the first movie, but it's not about it. I think it stands on its own 2 feet as a remake and a sequel.
I would have loved...
Is it have the same beats as the first movie, kind of? Yeah and no. That's a good response.
I would have loved... What I liked about this movie was everything we were shown, I was on board for. But whether it be Julie Bowen or Chris, who is Christ on the cross, or dead Brad, I could have watched a movie in which any of them were the lead characters. This movie was fascinating.
Let me say, I liked this movie. I didn't love this movie, but I found myself engaged by it because of the three actors.
Were you engaged to it?
Well, as I proposed to June when we jumped off the Champs-Élysées, like
you
it was
sure?
very similar. I thought it was fun, and I actually thought that I wanted more of the Julie Bowen when she was a creature and like she was screaming and blood was coming out and her eye popped out. I was like,
because she was doing bits.
Yeah,
it was so good.
She was in a different movie, frankly, one that I suspect I would have liked more.
Well, and that seems like more like the first movie, right?
Ask yourself, buddy.
Well, I will say, even based on what we saw from the clip you played, the first movie has a lighter touch.
Yes.
You know, and the Julie Bowen's performance works inside of that.
It's like she saw the first movie and she's
yes.
like, oh, we're doing that, right? And then they're like, sure. Now, that's it. Jason, what do you want to plug?
I will plug the Amazon Prime show Paper Girls. A phenomenal show based on the Brian K. Vaughan, Cliff Chang comic book.
So
it is so fun. It is incredibly compelling. All of these young actors are absolutely fantastic. And if you stick around through the show, guess what? I'm goddamn in it. So,
June.
I'm doing a couple of episodes of Phoebe Robinson's show, Everything is Trash, on Freeform. And I think the last two episodes I'm in are coming up pretty soon. But if you haven't seen it, check it out.
This summer on Unspooled, we're doing a whole series we're doing a whole series about heroes and villains. We've done movies like RoboCop and Fatal Attraction. And then Quentin Tarantino just came on last week on the show. And we talked about Richard Lester's Three Musketeers, which is super fun. And then every Thursday for free, Rob Hubel and I do a show online called Thursdays with Rob and Paul. Also, next week, Star Trek Lower Decks comes out, and that is streaming without commercials.
I you know what? I'm going to throw out, Star Trek Lower Decks is incredible, and it was one of my all-time favorite shows of the last few years. I'm also in Star Trek Prodigy. I'm going to throw that out, and it's also fantastic.
Thank you so much for coming. Thank you to the staff here. Thank you to our stage manager. Thank you to our tech people. Thank you to everybody here. Thank you for coming. We'll be back again. Bye-bye, everybody.